Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we've got a special episode for you. We're going to be checking in with some different consultants across the United States to see what crop conditions are like as we check in with our fellow NAICC members. But with me as always is Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, both with Tilth Agronomy. All right. Well, Todd, today we've got a special multi-part episode, I guess, technically, because we're going to be checking in with some different folks around the country, and all because we are members of NAICC, or the National Alliance of Independent Crop Consultants, which is a professional society for agricultural professionals who provide advisory and research services for a fee. It was founded in 1978. Its members are strictly independent, meaning they do not sell agricultural products or earn commissions on the treatments they recommend. So, Todd, you and I are both members, Bill as well, of NAICC, and you know, we see these folks at the national meeting every winter. So, but always good to kind of maybe check in outside of the one time a year we get to see everybody.
I'm excited to see what's going on in the area, kind of almost like a halftime update. So we're some of the people we talk about probably going to be past mid-season, where we're more mid-season, but we'll call it the halftime. You know, we're going to the locker room and just seeing what's going on out there. Hopefully everything's going good in each person's area. So
yeah, so we'll be checking in with some folks from different regions across the U.S. here and find out what's going on in their fields. So it'll be brief conversations, one-on-one with some folks, and I hope you enjoy. All right, so our first stop is the state of Michigan, and we're talking to Casey. So good morning, Casey.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you guys doing over there?
We're doing good. It's kind of a fun time for us right now. We're in between like major life decisions when it comes to cropping. We're not quite harvesting. Well, wheat's starting to roll in the state. I was down south yesterday and saw a few fields actually off already. But yeah, it's kind of a fun time. It's not as stressful as early season and not chasing manure tankers like we are in the fall. So.
I see.
How about for you? How are things going over there in Michigan?
Good, good. My name's Casey Carr, and I work for Sack of Potatoes. I'm their on-farm agronomist, and I've been working with potatoes for 15 years, and this year is one of the most stressful, like, heat stress, heat wave stresses I've experienced in that amount of time. I cover the Central Michigan region, and also Northeast Illinois. We have about almost 2,000 acres of potatoes there, as well as what we have up here in Central Michigan. So things are going all right. And just considering the heat waves that we've had, and then today, we've got smoke from wildfires yesterday and today.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we've got that our way too, and it's weird. It's like a fog, but it smells like campfire.
It does. It smells like camping.
Every time, yeah, all day yesterday, it was like I wanted to get out the graham crackers, marshmallows, and chocolate.
Just eat a s'more. And
yes. I don't know what the around here, what is it you say, I like fuzzy bunnies when the smoke blows in your face at the campfire, and it just right. Felt like all day you needed to say that. It just had a weird feel to it, but it would have been blazing hot, and it seemed like it was blazing hot still, but the sun wasn't quite as bad. So what do you think this smoke means for those potatoes that you're growing? Do you think it is going to be a negative, a positive, or just maybe a net neutral?
It's, it's a little bit neutral, and I have a few reasons to back that up. So I think I've heard some opinions from highly educated people that say we don't have photosynthesis when there's smoke. You know, this is bad news. If we don't have sunlight, we don't have photosynthesis. And after what we've been through here in Central Michigan with the heat waves, we have ozone injury on potato leaves. Oh. And that opens up, invites in the alternaria species and it just stresses the plant out to a point where it's going to get early blight more quickly, and it has gotten early blight more quickly. So in a way, the way I'm looking at it is that we've put these potatoes through a lot. This is our third heat wave, and then we get the smoke that comes in, and it is creating cooler conditions. This is the first cool morning I've felt in weeks.
Yeah, that was our morning yesterday. Yeah. We had that, yes, and it was odd. It was like 68 and felt sort of good. Yes, it was
right.
Right.
And so for potatoes bulking, so I got, you know, so I described the injury to leaf tissue when we have those high, when we have that high high heat in sunny days. But potatoes cannot bulk when the temperatures at night are over 70 degrees.
Okay.
It slows it way down. So we're at the point now where we've built these incredible potato vines. We've got, you know, we've got a good thing going, but now we have these decent sets on the potatoes. So there's sort of like plenty of potatoes around the places I've looked for the most part. But the more it continues to be over that 70 degree mark at night, the harder it is to finish this crop.
Sure.
So I almost don't mind the lack of direct sun for a few days, which is probably about what it's going to amount to based on the weather forecast I watched this morning. So I really don't mind the break from the direct sun, from that perspective that these potatoes need a break from that condition. And it's almost, you know, I didn't order this up, but it's almost like, okay, every now and then, you know, potatoes are from the Andes Mountains. They're Peruvian cool mountain.
Okay.
Yep.
Plants. So, well, you know, the things we ask them to do in Michigan and Illinois and down in Texas and everywhere else is sort of a, you know, that's kind of an extreme ask for a potato plant to begin with. So, so that's kind of my middle of the road take on the smoke right now.
Sure. So it sounds like, timing wise, it's working out okay. I mean, obviously for people, it's probably not ideal to sit around and smell all this smoke and breathe it in, the whole air quality thing, but it's good that it's having at least some benefit for you.
Yeah, but there still are consequences of, so like we haven't been able to spray our protective fungicides because the planes can't, you know, we rely a lot on airplane
visibility.
Crop dusters out here.
Yep.
Visibility. So then you go, well, you know, be careful what you wish for, because if you have leaf wetness due to lack of sun, that's a tar spot problem. That's a different crop, corn.
Yep.
But we've got that issue. You know, we've got our eye on that. And then just late blight. So the worst of the worst fungal pathogen that we get in potatoes, we really do like direct sun because it dries off the leaves. And if the leaves are dry, then that pathogen can't really take off, like when it's damp or dewy or wet. So yeah, there's just trade-offs when it comes to this stuff with that leaf wetness.
How's weed control in the potatoes? Is that like the least of the, because obviously disease and pests and other things that you're trying to apply fungicides and pesticides for, is that at least under control, or you have weed issues too?
Yeah, no, I mean around the countryside and on our farm, it looks like everyone got their pre-emergence on pretty well. There was some dry weather, so earlier in the spring, there were some pivots on, you know, to make sure that the dual type products get activated. So it turned out pretty good in terms of weeds for this early season. Overall, you know, I've seen much worse. You know,
sure. So. How far out are you from harvest?
Well, in Illinois, that's underway.
Okay.
So those potatoes are being shipped to be chipped currently.
Really?
Started last week. So that's going pretty good. And then up in central Michigan, it's usually around August 15th for a few of the fresh loads, we call them. So the most of the crop I take care of in central Michigan is our storage crop. So okay. These are potatoes that we're keeping until, into June of the next year. And our Illinois crop, we call it the fresh crop because we don't store it at all. Those go directly to potato chip plants. But up to Michigan by around August 15th, we might have a couple orders for some potatoes at some of the other plants that are in need of some fresh crop from Michigan as well. So we dabble in it around August 15th, August 20th in Michigan, and then we wait for cooler weather to start storing the crop which is usually like the second week of September.
Okay. So obviously we've talked, you're limited with options because of the visibility and potatoes are a fairly high management crop. I mean, it's not, when we think of, we think of our crops as high management, but potatoes are really high management. Man, we're doing a lot.
We're talking to a real agronomist.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Yes.
Yeah. Potato agronomists are like the real ones that know. Yeah. Any sort of vegetable crop, any sort of, that just, there's so much more specialty, so much more going on that you must laugh at, like on the corn bean side, agronomists. That way, and we got alfalfa and wheat can be a little finicky, but they're not potatoes. So yeah, it's nice to talk to somebody that is really it's kind of on the front lines, I guess, in the agronomy world.
But as far as recommendations this time of year, is it mostly just fungicide, or are you still fumigating fields, or what? I guess what should be happening? I mean, if we didn't have the limitations, you do.
You know, right now I kind of mentioned that our, you know, the early blight is invited by these plants that are under these hot, stressful conditions. And so timely fungicide applications that are more, I call them my high power fungicides, or ones that work well, that have high efficacy and suppression on early blight. So that starts to get expensive, you know, when we talk about premium fungicides. So timing is really important, where if you start too soon, like if you were to choose something for white mold, for example, and it's just not that type of conditions, you kind of, you don't want to do things in the wrong order. So it's, sure, it's a lot of scouting on our part. And sometimes scouting things, like you write the rec and then a few days later, I have to go back to visit because it changes that fast. You know, two cool nights, I couldn't, you know, maybe you don't find white mold, but then there it is, you know, on day number three, and you would have written the wrong rec, you know? So, it's very intense scouting, and so I guess my recommendations is just visit your potato fields, have someone scouting pretty much constantly, and that's what July is like in Central Michigan for potatoes. It's chasing Colorado, and it's chasing the correct disease to get all that stuff right.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds very intense, having to, you know, watch all the different metrics, the weather and everything, to know, okay, yep, things might have changed last night, so now we got to go back and check it again.
Have you seen any insect pressures specific? Is it just a constant sort of on potato leaf hopper, Colorado beetle? Is there certain wanes you've seen this year, less than normal, higher than normal kind of a thing?
So the Colorado potato beetle life cycle is ever-changing. So they are a super pest, and they're, you know, they've outrun all sorts of pesticides already. And so right now it's what we battle with, and it's kind of a community issue that we have. So we actually talk among other potato farms and other consultants and scouts in the area about which chemistries to use. So this is a big, big neighborhood problem of these beetles and then becoming resistant to certain insecticides. So we kind of have like a committee or a group that meets about this. But one of the main problems is that there's been a shift in overwintering adult emergence. So when I started 15 years ago, the overwintering adults would emerge over the course of about 3 weeks, let's say, and they'd start laying eggs. And by like week 2.5, you're going, I better spray these things, you know, if you're at like 30 to 50% egg hatch and you've got all these adults around, and then you spray, and then 15 years ago, you could spray and then you get to breathe for a minute until sort of the summer adults come up on the ones you decided not to spray, or the ones that didn't get sprayed very well. But this year, so different this year is that they have officially been emerging for 6 or 7 weeks at this point.
Wow. So just a constant barrage.
Yes. A constant barrage that's a good term. And it used to be they'd like get to the very edge of a field because they, you know, they love the smell of one another. They love each other's pheromone smells, and they're, you know, very attracted to one another. And then of course, when they start defoliating the plants, then that gives off a scent as well. And so they're highly attracted to margins. But what goes on when they're just here and there is that they don't really, it's hard to localize spray them. I used to get away with a couple margin sprays and don't get me wrong, I'm still margin spraying, but they're going and laying eggs in the center of the field because it's nice warm weather to fly in and travel in, and they're going all over. And so it's tricky. It's tricky how to time those insecticide applications that are expensive. And, you know, we believe in IPM strictly around here. And it's, if you're not at threshold, you're not at threshold. But what's it going to look like in a week if you don't spray and things like that? Yep. So, the second major issue is that the neonic lethal dose does not work as long as it used to. So what I mean to say is overwintering adults used to die better, and they would die for longer just by eating, feeding on the plants that had a systemic neonic in them, the potato plants. So we treat the seed pieces, and it used to be, you'd see these piles and piles of dead overwintering adults, and they were not a problem for a while. Maybe you're not spraying at all until July. And over the course of 15 years, they are not dying because they're emerging later. And then the lethal dose is very low. There's not enough.
Sure, it's gone through the system. Yep.
Yeah, there's not enough neonic left in the plant after 5 weeks. You don't expect the neonic to be able to do that anyway. But the odds are stacked against us in that they've shifted their emergence. And now this neonic also just isn't lasting as many days into the season as it used to historically.
Sounds like it's definitely living up to the name pest.
Super, super pest.
Isn't it weird how we get super weeds? Like for us, it's water hemp. Super. And
yeah,
just how those, I know the guy from Jurassic Park just passed away, and I don't think this is his line either, Matt. You would know, but it's you can say it. It's life finds a way.
Finds a way. That's Jeff Goldblum. Yes, so not the guy that played Alan Grant. Yeah,
but yes, it's amazing how those beetles can just be such, like you said, a super pest. And you can't you're doing everything you can to keep ahead of them, and luckily you are doing IPM, or they would have already been. You know, I'm sure they've already been resistant to more things. So,
yeah, it's physically exhausting as well, because you have to go and make sure it worked. And you know, I try new things sometimes, and I, you know, try to rotate chemistries, and there are things that I just got to make sure it actually worked, you know, and that kind of thing. So we re-scout things. This time of year, we're scouting fields almost twice a week due to making sure that it worked. And if it didn't work, plan B, you know?
Right.
Sure.
Wow. So. Twice a week too would be that. That would be difficult in that you don't see much progression, so the scouts get really bored. You know, like, well, this is the same as it was 2 days ago. And you're like, I know, but...
Exactly.
We have one soybean field that I've got on, I call it life support, because it's just had a lot of problems, and that's on a that's on a one-week basis. And even that, they're like, well, yeah, it's made progress, but...
It looks like it did last week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, with these high temperatures, these egg masses hatch in as little as 4 days.
Wow.
You know, once the larvae start feeding, you got to hit them when they're small. You know, insecticides work much better on young larvae than they do on older larvae. And that's, again, another IPM practice, is you have to get them when they're small so that you get a lot of them instead of waiting too long. And then the fourth instars are very difficult to kill.
Okay, sure. All right, before we wrap up, I thought of one more question for you. How big of a scouting crew do you have? Because for this intensive scouting, are you looking at like 20 people? Or are you looking at five? Like what kind of numbers?
It's four. So it's five interns, because I have one in Illinois as well. So five interns, and then I have an assistant that works and does a lot of the things that I do. She just helps me get around those margins, so she picks up a lot of that work too. So we're a team of six right now, and it's enough. It's enough work, and we've got to get into some corn because there's tar spot being found. So we're scouting some corn and
you got a lot of ground to cover, literally, and that's wow. Five or six people. Yeah.
Hopefully you have a good crew this year, because I know that ebbs and flows with how your crew can be at times. So I hope you have a good crew out there helping you, because that's very valuable. But, you know, they're thrown right in the thick of it usually right away too.
Right. We hone in on everyone's skills. Everyone has a different skill set, and you just got to pay attention to those skills, and then everyone's where they need to be, and really helps and contributes to the team. So I've had a good season so far with personnel, for sure.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time this morning, Casey, and we're going to leave you now, and we'll go to check in with another another locale. We're talking.
No, I feel like we got to let Casey go back out. In the, yeah,
yeah, you probably got lots of too much Colorado Beatles to chase.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, there's just not enough hours in a day, and it's just, you know, so you just roll with it, you know.
Yep.
It'll all get done. It'll all get done. Not a big deal.
Well, good luck. Light at the end of the tunnel.
There is. All right. Thanks for the opportunity. Talk to you guys later.
Yep. Thanks, Casey.
Yep. Bye bye.
All right, now we're going to jump over to Minnesota, and we're talking with Jason. So, Jason, how's things going over there?
It's good. It's a beautiful, hot day again in Minnesota.
I didn't know it got hot in Minnesota.
Boy, I always think that, and then all of a sudden you get a week like this, and you're like, I just want to stay inside, but you can't. You're walking out in cornfields and just sweating your tail off. So, it gets warm, just like you guys.
Yep. So, Jason, tell us a little bit about yourself and the crops you're dealing with. And
okay, all right. No, I'm Jason Fusi. I live in Willmar, Minnesota. Scout out of this area with Central Crop Consulting. Willmar is approximately about 2 hours straight west of the Minneapolis St. Paul. Got some pretty good land. My southern area is heavy clays. It goes all the way up to my northern area, which is irrigation. So I get quite a diverse line of soils that I work with. Crops, main crops are corn, soybeans, moderate amount of small grains, not a lot, but some. A lot of alfalfa because I got several large dairies in my area. Sugar beets is pretty common, quite a few edible beans. And then we got some canning companies here. So we got sweet corn, we got peas, we got lima beans, we got snap beans.
Sure.
That I scout with. So we got a diverse amount of crops that I work with, which is awesome. But a lot to keep track of. So, but been around here for 29 years doing this and loving every minute of it. So,
well, you don't look like you've been doing it for a day over 10. So,
no, I needed that.
Got to make you feel good this morning, Jason.
That's right. You bet.
So, how are crops looking over there? Is corn growing like a weed? Is it, you know?
Everything? Oh, as much as I don't want to jinx it, it is probably the best looking crop I've ever seen.
Okay.
In 29 years. Everything is, I mean, we're fairly even across the board. We had wonderful planting conditions coming into the season here. I got a couple of nice timely rains. Last year, of course, for my area, we were just extremely detrimental with 40 to 50 inches of rain throughout the season. So we had probably my worst year ever.
Okay.
And droughtouts and just stunted crops. But this year, seeing these even conditions and great growth, yeah, it's really been good. We had a fair amount of rain in June, a lot of dates, like 13 days of rain in June, but they weren't anything with large amounts. So we've really been kind of spoon-feeding it, but it is getting hot now, and it looks like it's getting dry, so we'll see what happens in the near future.
Yeah, this week I think was our first Wednesday. It hasn't rained in at least a month. It's every Wednesday, for whatever reason, it would rain. and we're getting a little bit, I don't know about you, you cover a pretty big area, but it's been real spotty. Like, some areas are getting hammered, next area is getting hardly anything, and we're just kind of seeing, you know, most guys are getting enough rain, but there's pockets where it's dry.
Yeah, and I know there's guys on our staff, especially towards the southwest of me, that are talking the same way, that they have areas that are just curling up already, and they got areas that have been getting hit a little bit harder. I've been having those pockets like yourself, but those pockets have pretty well covered my entire area. Okay. So I've been pretty fortunate, like I said, just to see everything where it's at and watch. And I mean, like I said, the growth on the sugar beets is amazing. The corn, the soybeans have taken off like crazy. Best edibles I've seen in I don't know how many years. So yeah, things are really looking up. Now, you know, the worst part is I probably have the best looking water hemp crop I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, sure. Yep. So,
yes.
That loves this weather too.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Well, you're jumping right ahead to what I was going to ask you next, is what's your biggest pest right now? What's bugging you out in the field?
Oh, that is definitely water hemp. We are dealing with that thing. After last year, many years of working with guys, you know, we have a lot of, you know, history of keeping fields clean and doing a great job. But when you get a year like last year and 4 foot tall corn, 5 foot tall corn that you can't go out there, and water hemp is emerging late and going to seed, and you have drawn outs and you can't get out there to clean them up. And my seed bank has gone from very good to Oh, very erratic. I mean, I got brownouts with just horrible control. I mean, it's not horrible, but it's these are challenges is what I'm calling them, okay? I feel very good on what we've done. We've made headway. There's no doubt about it. But at the same time, it's going to take several years to fix these problems that occurred last year. So
sure. Any disease starting to move in into your area? We've had tar spot, not really in the area we cover, but it's made its way into the state. And we were talking to Casey right before we jumped on with you, and she said down the Illinois-Michigan corridor, they're starting to get some. So some tar spot over there. So
yeah, there's a couple guys that talked about tar spot. We just had kind of our winter sales kickoff, you could say, meeting on Wednesday. And several guys have seen it down in southern Minnesota. I've been walking some corn. I love it. There's nothing out there. There's no northern corn. There's no rust yet. There's nothing, which is what I'm looking forward to. Cercospora was extremely detrimental to us in the sugar beets last year. That just disseminated everything. We had brown fields out there. We sprayed seven times, couldn't keep it clean.
Oh, geez.
Couldn't keep ahead of it. Yeah, that rain, just all that continuous rain and heavy dews, it was optimal for the cercospora, not for us. And so with all the inoculum out there, we thought this year was going to be horrible. And so far, we've been keeping ahead of it. But with the best beet crop I've ever seen, too, we've also sprayed already four times. We're sure. Spraying every 10 or 11 days on these beets, and we got a long ways to go before we're going to shut that down. So we're probably going to have 8 fungicide sprays on some of these sugar beets by the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's one crop we don't really have any good sense of. We don't, we do some canning, some veg crops and stuff here, but not the sugar beets.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a different challenge, and our chemistries in water hemp and sugar beets is, you don't have much to work with there. I mean, there's certain crops that you don't have much to work with. Well, then cut that in half, and that's what you got with sugar beets. So
it's, sure.
Yeah, very limited. And cultivation, it's coming back.
Really? Man, using it, a lot. Good.
Oh, gosh, we have cultivation going out in the edibles, and we got cultivation in the sugar beets, and one guy even did some soybeans, but those are some natto beans that we're dealing with. But yeah, it's the FomaSafe and chemistries. That was maybe at 20% control this year on water hemp. It was just a disappointment. And so then you're dealing with that again.
We've seen it, what it did to the Flexstar. Seemed like it made more mummies out there than it kind of. We either wanted to kill or not kill, and it was maybe not. We wanted to kill. But it created these zombie water hemp that were harder to kill later than cultivation would work and some other practices. But that's tough.
The high oleic beans this year, because we got a lot of guys, a lot of dairy guys pushing Plenish, and your options are limited. And so
I came back with Cobra on mine. So I could have poured that down the drain. So it did nothing. It ticked more of a mile some more. So.
Yeah, it just made the field look ugly for a few days.
Yep. But I'm looking at it. It was right about at R1, so I'm like, that was my silver.
Oh, yeah. Mold. Yeah, perfect.
Just your white mold. A little white bit of white mold suppression.
Yeah. Yep.
You bet. So, but yeah, otherwise, the diseases have not been an issue in the corn. Alfalfa has been clean. They had a little bit of overwintering problems with the alfalfa. I should have said that at the beginning, just coming into the season. But yeah, I think it wasn't a horrible winter. I mean, I think really what happened is we weakened so many of these roots last year with that 40 to 50 inches of rain and desaturated soils, and that the alfalfa kept growing last year. But when it came to overwintering, it said, forget it, I am not living through this. And it just kind of, so it was just, it wasn't patches. It was just scattered plants everywhere that just died.
Sure.
And so we thinned out some stands. We're going to be digging up more alfalfa this fall than we probably ever have before either. So
those wet years seem to just, I mean, most alfalfa, 4-year rotation, is that typically what you guys have, like a seeding year and 3 more years?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, and that's fairly common for us too. But you get one wet year in there, and then it just, the whole thing's all screwed up and out of whack, and you got to seed more. And so I feel for you after that, because it makes it tough in the rotation.
Are your guys stocked pretty well? I mean, inventory is pretty good, that it's not as big of a deal, or is it?
We're stuck after last year because the last 2 years we've had plentiful rain, so the hay market has gone in the complete toilet. So because everybody had so much hay and haylage and stuff that we didn't need any. I mean, you need to make some every year, but still, we right. It's not like we were right at the bare end of it and needed to go cut now to have feed for the cattle. We had plenty of stockpiles, so we're going to be just fine.
Good. So. Yeah, at least, yeah, the timing of that works out then. If inventories are good, it's okay to have to manage alfalfa a little bit tougher. So
yes, yeah.
What are you finding this time of year for you as far as recommendations for growers? Are you just kind of looking at next year? Are you looking at still some issues for this year, or what?
Well, our beets and edibles are kind of you still got fungicide going on the beets. You got to keep watching for that all year, all summer. Yeah, the edibles we're putting up probably our final white mold recommendations out there. We finally had some leafhoppers show up just this past about 2 weeks ago. Before that, you couldn't find one. So that was kind of a pleasant surprise. And they didn't come in high numbers when they did come a couple weeks ago. Corn, a big week of walking corn and soybeans next week and the week after with soybean aphids. So they've started showing up lately, but a little bit later than usual. But my county is always seems to be infested, one of the first counties in the state. And so we will be putting fungicide wrecks out and insecticide wrecks out coming up in the next 2 weeks. I sent something out to a lot of my growers on fungicide on corn. I'm not a huge advocate of fungicide on corn. We've seen a lot of inconsistent responses around here. I think our company as a whole, we've done like over 1,400 trials. We're like 6.1 bushel. Well, that doesn't sound too bad. But when you start breaking down our areas where these trials have been, because we can do that in our data discovery files, my area is roughly at 3.6, if you look like about a 12-year average.
Sure.
And I more or less told guys this is the best-looking crop we've seen, you bet. And if you want to protect it, go ahead. Here's what I would do. Here's the timing. But I'm not saying go do it.
Yep.
And gave them some opportunities on just specific hybrids that are going to be more vulnerable and stuff like that. And so those recommendations, those talks are happening right now. Just before you guys came on the phone or gave me a call here, I talked to two guys already that said, hey, I got your email. And what do you think about this hybrid and that? Just trying to decide. So these guys are making some decisions, but crop prices aren't, it's not $5, $6 corn. It's a $25, yep. $30 application here. So we need 7 bushel to get return on investment in most cases.
Right.
So, yeah. So we're busy with that, but we are not far off from starting fertility wrecks already on some of this early stuff based on some of the past grids we've done. And yeah, things are coming fast. So,
how far out do you feel you are from like silage harvest? Are you going to be a month yet? 2 months?
We're ahead of the game here. So my guesstimate right now is that silage harvest would start about August 25th. So there's a lot of times silage is closer to September 2nd to the 8th, I would say, is roughly our range. But our early years is the 25th to the 28th of August. And like I said, right now we've seen tassels sooner than before. We got a month and a half before we get there. So that can change real fast. But sure. At the same time, the progress we've made with the crop and where we're at, the granular units and stuff like that, we're ahead of the game right now. So.
Yeah, you're pretty much in line with where we sit for silage. And normally we're rarely earlier than probably September 1st, but a lot of times that early part of September to mid-September is our fairly normal. We're tasseling now. This week is really starting to pop, and I actually took a drive to southern Wisconsin yesterday, and it's one of those years where everything must have got planted in about the same 2 week period, because it doesn't matter where you go, we're all kind of in a pretty similar looking situation here. So
are you guys at pollination, Jason? Is a lot of corn pollinating now, or is it just
it is a little bit all over the place. I mean, there's a portion of the fields that are pollinating pretty hard right now, but some are, we had two big planting sprees. We had a chunk where we had probably 35-40% of the crop go in, then we had 2 inches of slow, beautiful rain and kept us out for about a week to 10 days. And so there's kind of two groups there. But everything has some tassels showing out there. So it's all over the board. A little bit uneven this year. We had some frost come through early in the season. Seemed to kind of stunt some corn so that you can tell right where that frost was. Like, oh, sure, the tassels aren't showing there quite yet, you know. But overall, it's coming fast. The heat that is here, you know, it's like, okay, we have humidity with it, so I'm not too worried about pollination yet. We have decent moisture in the soil. Our last rain was about 8-9 days ago. About a week of 90s will suck that out pretty fast, and I don't like our long-range forecast because it's cool good for early next week, but then straight back into the 90s by about Thursday or Friday, which pollination will be early to late next week, like the heaviest probably pollination in the entire area is what I would say.
So, okay. Yeah, we talked a little bit beforehand, too, about the smoke, and we were going to give you a hard time. We thought maybe it'd be sunny by you because a lot of it's blowing over our way, but it sounds like you've been getting hit with it, too. What's your feelings on the effect that's got on the crop?
It always seems to slow it down. I mean, hay drying, I think we've talked about. It just, it's almost feels like it's nearly impossible. I think as a whole, just photosynthesis on these plants is... it's affected. It's just, it's not normal. And it affects how these plants are responding with that and the respiration and stuff like that. So I do think it's detrimental. I'm trying to remember. I think it was back in, was it 18 or 19? It was probably one of the smokiest years I've ever seen around here. A lot of Canadian fires that just, straight north winds, that just kept blowing it to us. And guys, that sprayed fungicide that year. Actually saw a larger response, and we were talking, you know, at the short course in the cities in December, and there was a lot of talk from even university specialists that were saying that they think that fungicide helped with overall plant health with that smoke, and we got some yield response off it. It doesn't mean I'm going to spray everything with fungicide this week,
yep. You know,
but at the same time, I think there is some logic there too. So.
Well, and depending on how thick the smoke is, those planes are going to have a hard time finding the right field to do the fungicide as it is.
Yeah. If they start spraying over my house in the spring, I guess, that's not good. So.
Well, you won't have any fungus on your roof. You'll be good.
There you go.
Look at the bright side.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time this morning, Jason, and always happy to talk to you. And we'll hope you have a good rest of the season, and we'll probably see you this winter at the NAICC annual meeting, right?
All right, yeah, sounds wonderful. Hopefully you guys have a great finish to this season as well.
All right, thanks, Jason.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. Thanks. Have a great harvest.
All right, see you guys.
Now we're going to jump down to Iowa and talk to Alan. So, Alan, how are you doing this morning?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing there?
We're doing pretty good. It's smoky here. Have you gotten any of that wildfire smoke down your way or not?
No. Not really. We haven't. We did a few years ago, but no, we haven't got any now. So,
all right. Well, you're the lucky one this morning. So far, everyone we've talked to has been dealing with it up in the northern part of the Midwest here. So, Alan, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are, and what kind of crops you look at?
Okay. Yeah, Alan Hubers from Sanborn, Iowa. I work for Alpha Ag Research, primarily contract research on corn, soybeans, and now a little bit of hybrid rye, which is kind of new for us this year. But I also do a little consulting with a few growers in the area. So that's my background, primarily research, but a little bit of in-season consulting in corn and soybeans.
Yeah, you're a dual threat. You've got both research background and consulting to deal with all summer long, so I'm sure it keeps you busy.
Yeah, it is, but it is fun, so I enjoy it.
That's good. So how do crops look for you right now? Are you pretty happy with the way things are? You got some struggles? What are we looking at for?
Yeah, so right in our immediate area, I would say things look really good. We had a dry early season, so the corn is a little shorter than it has been the past couple years, but the week of the 4th of July, we got about 4 to 6 inches of rain, depending where you were. And so we have pretty good moisture now, and that set us up for what I think will be a good pollination time, which we're pollinating now, the majority is. And okay. uh, We were actually out yesterday morning and spraying with a backpack and our VT applications, and all of us got, you know, sick from the pollen because we all have allergies.
Sure.
But we got it done.
You just explained the worst day on, like, scouting in the pollen, spraying fungicide in the pollen is the toughest day of the year in our lives, yes.
So for a VT application on a, with a backpack sprayer, do you have, like, a lift system to get the boom up higher, or are you, like, on a really tall unicycle? How does that work?
We have, we're using our normal booms, and that works fine this year. We do have an extension that we have used in the past. like I said, with the corn being a little bit shorter, all of us can reach over top this year. But some of, you know, in the past, Corey was the only one who could really get the boom up without the extension.
You need your high boy, literally the high boy.
Yep, the highest guy. The
tallest person.
So we do have a Skywalker high boy sprayer that we can use, but the problem is, and we've done plots with it, but the problem is when you turn, it just destroys the end rows till they're totally flat, basically.
Sure.
And so we've kind of opted to not use that unless we really, really have to.
How are you seeing pollination? Is this weather... It's obviously too early to tell, but if you had to kind of say, are you seeing that just in general conditions are okay enough, or has it been too hot that it's going to mess with pollination?
So there's a few days in here that it's going to be a little hot. Anytime, my understanding is anytime it's over 86 poses some risk to the pollen, which thankfully that's only been for a couple hours in the afternoon, typically. But I think today and maybe Monday are supposed to be here highs in the mid-90s, so it'll probably be a lot hotter for longer.
Sure.
So I think with the moisture we have that we got the week of the 4th of July, I think overall we're going to have good pollination. But yeah, that heat is definitely a risk to pollen, and but at least we have the moisture to protect the plants a little bit.
When you said two to 4 inches in that 1 week, how did that have any lasting effects, or was it actually slow enough of a rain that it wasn't a problem, or how did that rain all come?
It was, we got like 3/4 of an inch every day for 6 days.
That's almost, if you could get that much rain, that would be the way to get it, I think.
Right.
There was very... I mean, there were a few areas that got a downpour that got, you know, 2, maybe 3 in one of those days. But for the most part, those were limited, and everybody got a little bit every day. So it was really overall pretty nice. The one side, or two side effects, I guess, is we did have some hail, and we do have some green snap randomly in places too. So... one of our trial sites, we've got up to 15 to 20% green snap. So,
oh wow,
it wasn't. That's not widespread, but there are some of those issues, and you can tell already now where you had hail. We've already got northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot, and some common rust. Starting, if you didn't have hail, you can hardly find disease.
Sure.
So definitely having an effect there.
Yeah, we had a couple bouts of hail earlier. So we had some probably, I don't know, shin to knee high corn get shredded pretty good, but now it's kind of growing through it. And
it was like V8 corn that got knocked back to V6 for a little while and then was fine. But yeah, that would be a rough timing for hail, because that's a little bit more of a of a problem, and then green snap isn't fun either when you have that.
That hurts worse than the hail, that hail that we've had anyway, because, I mean, yeah, there's a spot 10 miles from here where it got, you know, hailed to the ground.
Sure.
And they're replanting, but for the most part, it just banged the leaves up. It was prior to pollination, so... tassel sawhaul seemed to come out fine, and I think for the most part, it's just cosmetic and maybe a little more disease susceptible, but I think we'll be okay. But the green snap, you don't get that back.
Nope. Yeah, unfortunately not. Weed control-wise, how are things? Was it a pretty good year for weed control? You're struggling with some outbreaks?
This year, the pre's worked way better than last year. So 2024, we had a really, really wet year, and even several towns had flooding near us. And I think we got water hemp and all kinds of weeds from everywhere. So 2025, it's like we put the pre's out. We had rains, actually had more rain in 25 than 26, but for some reason they work better this year than they did in 25. So we didn't have to chase stuff as bad this year.
Sure.
And so for the most part, weed control is pretty good. The one thing we've had a lot of, though, is dicamba injury on Enlist beans. Everything's been puckered up for weeks. It's finally starting to grow out of it. And I think we won't know, obviously, till combines roll, but I think a few of my growers are going to have fields that are actually hurt yield-wise from it, because they're still twisted and puckered up, and they're, you know, we're going into R2 now, and they sure still haven't outgrown it. So they're starting to, but whenever you have that injury during flowering and pod fill is when it's most risky. Sure.
Was it mostly from like drift or from, yeah, how some spray tank contamination? What was most of the problems out there?
I think what has aggravated it is we had one, a really dry spring. And so things were growing really slow during that herbicide time period. And I think a lot of it came from corn.
Right.
The worst areas are corn on corn around dairies, where they rent everything and it's corn silage on corn silage on corn silage. And then you get a little patch of beans out in that area, and that's the heaviest. I also think the majority of the co-ops around here still are using Callisto for their HPPD primarily.
Okay.
And it's not very good on water hemp. And they haven't switched to Lotus or Impact or some of the better ones. So what they're having guys do is switch to dicamba.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah. Sure. So
that's good to know. We use quite a bit of Callisto in our area. You're having better luck with Impact and some other things.
Yeah.
And Lotus. Yeah. Okay.
Especially obviously post.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah. Lotus and atrazine has worked. That's what we use on most of our research. That's worked really well still. So.
Yeah. We used to use a lot of Lotus, and about the time Callisto came off patent and just got a lot cheaper, I think that one seemed to be more of a use on that herbicide. And like you say, maybe there's certain areas we got to push back to try some different modes of action. So,
well, Callisto, I don't know here, like when I was in North Carolina, Callisto was never very good as a post on Palm Amaranth, whereas Lotus seemed to do much, much better naturally, even before any type of, you know, resistance or whatever.
Right.
Callisto was never really used heavily in North Carolina because, one, we had high organic soils and it didn't work pre in those soils, and then it didn't kill Palmer, so it never really caught on in that area.
Yeah. So, yeah, here we do primarily use it as it's a pre-emerge technology, or overlap it than we do trying to get. Yeah, I've seen it kill 2-inch water hemp, but that's about it. So yeah.
Good shot of Lotus and a pint of atrazine is really, really good on water hemp still. So yep,
good to know.
At least here it is. I know that varies because there's I know there's resistance too. So it just depends where you're at.
Any pests bugging you down there? Any, you know, bugs getting out of control, or you've been pretty good that way?
Nope, it's been pretty good. Haven't seen any soybean aphids yet. We did spend Tuesday and Wednesday digging corn rootworm to do root evaluations on corn rootworm, and that site is a lot heavier than it was last year, so
okay.
It seems like it may be but that's also where we do our research, and it's corn on corn for 15 years, and
sure.
You know, we try to grow them so we can figure out how to kill them.
Right.
It's a perfect storm there, so. But that's good. Like I said, that's good for research. We got some good data out of that, I think, so.
Yeah, that's definitely one we're keeping an eye on. We've had some issues with rootworm on certain fields up in our area, so it's always one we don't want it to get out of control, that we'd hopefully
right.
Stay ahead of it. So,
yep.
So what kind of recommendations are you making right now? Is there anything real pressing, or are you kind of coasting through to harvest, or what are you looking at when you're dealing with your growers?
So we're pretty much done with the wrecks. The wrecks are out, but I use sap analysis with the growers I work with. And so we set up our VTR1 spray with nutrients and with biostimulants, as well as typically a cheaper generic fungicide.
Okay.
And so a lot of times what we can do, we can get, you know, like a generic Quiltec cell, a good biostimulant, and the right micronutrients, and we can get that for the same or less than Veltima by itself, for example. And we end up doing a lot better yield-wise overall than just the high-dollar fungicides. So that's kind of what I've just finished up working on, and now the sprayers and planes and drones are rolling to get those sprayed now.
Sure. So. So what are you thinking for harvest timing? Like, how far out from harvest do you think you are?
So, heat unit wise, we're a little ahead of schedule, and it looks to be warm for the next little while. So I'm thinking we could, obviously you never know what August is going to be. It might cool off again, but we're on set to be a week or two early.
Okay.
Which would possibly put us starting to harvest corn mid-September.
That's crazy.
That's awesome.
That's awesome, yeah.
So we had a good early start planting, and we're pollination's a week to 10 days ahead of last year. So
okay.
And with the current forecast, it looks warm.
Right, looks very warm.
The next
right.
Several
so
days.
Should keep so. Pushing. Yeah.
Yep.
When I was always cool to just drive the countryside because it's just corn, beans, corn, beans, corn, beans, beans, yep. Beans, corn. And you can really usually get a good idea of, such not in the corn necessarily, of how good the weed control was, but the beans, you can really tell. Like, there's just certain years where you, like, drive through and you're like, holy man, what happened? There's a lot of whatever weed. Usually it's water hemp. But as you drive the countryside, is it just clean fields for days and looks kind of tabletop and great like Iowa always seems to, or is this kind of one of those off years where Iowa's maybe not quite as good as it always seems to be?
Iowa, for the most part, I think is fairly good. From what I understand, some of like southeast Iowa and southern Illinois, and then also into Nebraska, had a fairly wet spring, and I was actually down in Aurora, Nebraska a couple weeks back looking at some trials for one of my clients, and they've got some, you know, drown out potholes, and they've got some weed control issues because it was too wet to get through the fields timely. So I know there's pockets around Iowa, Illinois, Nebraska that had that wet spring. So I know they've got some issues just with not being able to be timely, but we didn't have that at all this year. Everything so right around here looks good.
And that's where all of the corn and beans are grown. It's just such a top producing state that it always is. This is the fun time to drive through there. It's like mid July to August, and you just see whatever how everything looks is like always blows me away. So that's good. That's good.
Before we wrap up, I do have one thing I want to ask you about. You mentioned earlier you're getting into hybrid rye. Is that more on the research side, or do you have guys growing it for a specific purpose, like seed production, or?
So it's initially right now it's just research project.
Okay.
For a hybrid seed producer, hybrid rye seed producer. However, there are several dairies around here that do typically chop rye in the spring, the fall, plant in the fall, chop it for silage in, I guess, May or June. I don't remember the timing exactly. And then they'll plant soybeans behind it.
Okay.
As a feed supplement or part of their ration. It's not a huge part. Obviously, corn silage still is the bulk. But a lot of the dairies are doing some rye. So I think that's the interest. And the beautiful thing that I see about rye is we didn't use a herbicide, and there is zero water hemp in that rye.
Yeah, it is a great job of suppressing weeds.
This year in fields, I'm shocked. We used, say, rye as a cover crop, or maybe did use it as a forage, but like some of the headlands, it didn't come through as well. Or I had one where the drill wasn't working, so you had a row missing of the rye, and you could just, it's crazy how much water hemp are in those areas, and it's perfectly clean everywhere else. So yeah, there's a professor in Wisconsin here, Rodrigo Worley, that has a lot of good research on its herbicide capability. Like, he even ranked it as a herbicide, and it's better than, or as good as most pre-emerges when it comes to doing that. So that is cool. Do you think that rye will be able to move to other states around you, like Minnesota, Wisconsin? I mean, that is the research going good? Does it look like a good hybrid?
Honestly, I don't know what to expect. This is really our first year doing it. So I hope it's really kind of wet right now. So hopefully harvest. For this project, we're just doing it for grain.
Okay. Okay.
Evaluation. I think the plan is next year we'll probably chop some and do some for grain. But it's really just the first year of it. But we bought a drill and a little combine. So the idea is that this is going to be a longer term thing. Sure. So,
well, we'll definitely have questions for you come the annual meeting in January to see how it went. So,
right. Yep.
But with that, thanks for taking the time this morning, Alan, and talking to us. And always appreciate your insights, and you guys, your research stuff is always fascinating to talk about. So we'll hopefully have you on again to talk about some more of what you've been doing. But thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Alan.
Right. Yep, thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right, now we're going to swing down south to the state of Texas and talk to James. So, James, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great.
Glad to hear it. So you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what area you cover down in Texas?
You bet. So my name is James Todd. I own a independent crop consulting business called Todd Ag Consulting in Plainview, Texas. I work in what many refer to as the Texas High Plains and the Texas Panhandle region. I cover about 10 counties out here. We work primarily in corn, cotton, grain sorghum silage, wheat. Some years we have some black-eyed peas and sunflowers, and so we have a pretty good crop mix, really.
Yeah, that's a more unique, before we talked to you, we were talking the Midwest, so it's a lot of corn, beans. Haven't really gotten into the cotton side of things yet, so that'll be interesting to hear how that crop's doing. So in general, would you say you're having a good season or had some struggles, or what does the season look like for you?
It's really been a struggle. At my office there in Plainview, we finally had our first rain over half an inch about 2 weeks ago. We've been really below average rainfall That rain was the first rain over half an inch since September of last year. Let me put it in perspective.
Wow.
And so we've been extremely dry. We did not have a wheat crop, which is very unusual for us. Even irrigated wheat, we could not meet the demand. We were 80 degrees on Christmas day down here. And so it just... And so as a result of that, our soil moisture conditions have been poor. Our irrigation, we irrigate from the Ogallala for the most part, and we're on the kind of the tail end of it. And so our water is diminishing quickly, and we just don't have the irrigation capacity without rainfall to meet crop demand. And so it's been a struggle this year. Also check a lot of dry land crops. May and June are generally a wet months for us where we can get a dry land crop established. And we just had zero soil moisture going into the year. We planted our crops thinking that they were going to be a failure on the dry land. And we got just enough rain to get them germinated and up.
Okay.
And we just kind of keep getting small little rains to keep them alive and going. So we're still hanging in there with a lot of our dry land, but next week's supposed to be near 100, so I'm not sure how long that's going to hold on.
Yeah. That's surprising you've been able to keep the dry land going when you were struggling even with some irrigated crops. So
yeah, cotton's pretty resilient.
Sure.
It'll hang on for a long time.
Without a wheat crop, are those acres getting rotated to something else, or is it just maintaining weed control on them throughout the summer, or what happens then?
Yeah, a lot of those acres went to cotton or to some other summer crop, and so yeah, just it kind of increased our summertime acres to a degree, and of course where we have limited water, you know, that's just that much more water you're trying to spread in the summertime, so it just kind of puts an additional stress on everything you're trying to keep wet.
Oh, absolutely. So I'm assuming weed control maybe has been a bit of an issue too without all that water, or have the weeds been struggling as much as the crops to grow?
No, the weeds, they seem to do good regardless of whatever conditions you have. and so, yeah, the weeds, you know, weeds are our big problem anymore. I mean, that's what we spend a lot of our time focused on, especially in a crop like cotton where you never get canopy closure like maybe you guys do with corn and soybeans. You know, cotton, the way we grow cotton is we try to keep it, you know, 30 inches or less, and so it is very susceptible to weeds all the way up until harvest, so we're fighting weeds constantly.
Sure.
That would be difficult because, yeah, in general I say our weed control is our crop canopy. We just use herbicides to let it get there. So like you say, if you can't allow that to happen, then that would be really difficult.
Yeah. We'll have pigweeds that'll continue to germinate. We'll have pigweeds emerging, you know, in early September. We harvest cotton in late October, early November. So we just have constant weed pressure.
What's your worst? Do you have Palmer, water hemp, those type? What's sort of the, if you had to pick the worst weed that you have to deal with, or maybe it's for you the top three, I don't know, but yeah, what are the worst ones?
Yeah, Palmer is definitely our big one. I mean, it's just I go to sleep at night and I close my eyes and I see little pigweeds, you know, dancing around. It's just relentless, you know. And then kochia is becoming a bigger and bigger problem all the time for us. It's just getting to where it's resistant to so many of the herbicides that we use, and so it is a really bad problem weed, and they start germinating for us now in like early January. So, you know, we deal with them in our spring burn downs, we deal with them you know, early season in the crop, and then we deal with them in late in the season as we start planting fall winter wheat. You know, we deal with them, so it's just it just seems like those weeds are becoming just as problematic as Palmer is. So those are our two big ones, really. That's what we spend all our time and effort on.
Sure. As far as bugs, are you having a lot of issues with bugs this year, or is it mainly weeds? What kind of pests are you looking at down there?
It has been, to some degree, a remarkably quiet season as far as insects and cotton. We generally do with deal with western flower thrips early in the season on cotton, and they were just none. With no wheat crop, you know, those things get started in the spring on the wheat, and then they move into cotton as the wheat dries down. But with no wheat around, it's like we lost that pest this year, which is really great. The cotton has, where it's been irrigated and has water, has just never really suffered, and we've really remained pretty well insect free. Now in corn, we deal with Banks grass mites. We have them. It's just almost a given every year we're going to fight them, and that's kind of where we're at right now. We're right in the middle of treating Banks grass mites. We also have a new pest, the corn leafhopper. And they're not so much a problem in our early planted corn. It was planted back in April, but we do have a lot of dairies in our area. And so we do a lot of split planting of corn. So now we've got some late corn that's, you know, kind of in that B6 to B10 range. And so it's susceptible to corn leafhopper. And so we're making applications now on that. So, sure. And then with our sorghum, we just started picking up sugarcane aphids. It's kind of been a new pest over the past 10 years that's developed down here, and it is it's really problematic. You really have to be aggressive with that pest. Can't let it build. So that's kind of where we're at.
Definitely sounds like you got your work cut out for you.
Yeah. You just said not too many bugs and then just named all bugs that would be really difficult and a problem. So.
Yeah. Some of them are given. You know, you're going to have them every year, you know, and it's.
Yep. And that when you're fighting new bugs like that corn leafhopper, that's always because you don't know what to expect. Then now you're playing without a playbook. So I feel for you there where you probably don't have an established threshold. You know, there's just not a lot of knowns about it. Is that one kind of the newest, scariest bug that's been coming?
Yeah, it has been. You know, we started to know some about 3 years ago, and you know, to put in a plug here, you know, one of the first phone calls I made was, you know, through NEICC. I've gotten to know people in Brazil. I knew it was a problem in Brazil, so I called Dindin in Brazil, and he put me in touch with some guys, and so I kind of got a handle on, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and then, you know, our state entomologist, David Kearns, College Station, we spent a lot of time talking on the phone and kind of developing thresholds and trying to figure out how to manage this pest based on, you know, things that they do in Brazil and Mexico. And so it's definitely been a learning curve, but it just kind of seems like that's where we've been the past few years. We had the sugarcane aphid that came into sorghum about 10 years ago, like I said, and it was a similar type deal. Nobody really knew how to handle it. And at that time, David was at LSU, and I would call him and kind of talk to him and try and develop control methods and figure out how we're going to handle this pest. So it's a lot of times these organizations that you get involved with, it comes to pay because you can know somebody that's dealt with that pest and call them up and say, hey, what can I do here? And that network of people across the country becomes really valuable.
Yeah, it's great to have resources to lean on, and you know, it's one of the wonderful things about NAACC is being able to just connect with people. And if somebody's having a problem, either you've had it or you're very likely going to have it at some point. So it's always good to have that in your corner.
Yep, absolutely.
So I guess last thing we haven't talked about is disease. Any disease issues for you this year? I mean, for us, it's been pretty good. We had some hail early on, so we've got some damaged leaves, and but even that, I haven't really seen a too terrible of an outbreak. Anything heading down your way?
Yeah, you know, we're kind of getting in that time period where I expect to see southern rust if we get rains, and we've had some spots that have had some rains. We had some spots over the weekend that got 2 inches of rain, and so when you get those hard, heavy rains like that, and we've been somewhat cool this week. We've been down in the 80s. I think your weather's down here. We've kind of been in the mid-80s and humid this week. And you anticipate southern rust starting and something like that. So, you know, we're pretty proactive with that disease. I like to get a fungicide on corn and prior to seeing it. If I know conditions are right, I get a fungicide out. Because sure. If you're on the backside of that disease, you're just chasing your tail.
That's funny to say, we haven't had that disease in 20 years, and last year in 2025, we got it, had an outbreak of it, and you're right, once it was like, oh, we'll get the drones out after we saw it, and it didn't really matter after the time, and we'll get it up here probably that once every 10 or 20 years. How often do you see it in Texas that it is a problem?
You know, we used to hardly ever see it, and now... it seems like, and when I say we hardly ever used to see it, I'm talking about 20 years ago. It was something you might see on some late corn in September, but it's I think a lot of the hybrids now that we have just don't have the resistance. Maybe some of those older ones did, and so it's becoming more and more a common issue year in and year out. And of course, I think, you know, probably things like no-till and different things too, not, you know, probably help it linger around. But it's becoming more a yearly occurrence for us than a rarity.
Yeah, that's always disappointing when you're like, oh, this only happens every so often, and then it becomes more and more frequent. You know, we talked to Casey earlier, and she had some examples of that too, of pests that they're seeing up in their way or diseases, and just gets to be a lifelong issue of like, all right, what's going to be the next big problem? And hopefully you get the last one covered before the next one shows up.
Yep. It just seems like you always got to be watching for that new one, you know, and what's coming down the pike and what guys are having problems with in other areas. It seems like those become your problems at some point.
Yep.
And you just got to be prepared for it.
So you mentioned cotton harvest. How far out are you from like corn and sorghum harvest? Are you getting pretty close, or is it a little ways away yet?
It's still a ways away. My earliest planting corn this year was in March. We never plant corn in March, but we were so warm, a guy went out there and stuck his neck out and did it, and it's worked perfectly. So he may cut corn the end of the month, 1st of August.
Oh, wow.
Which is really unusual. But typically our corn harvest, we'll start chopping silage around the 15th of August, and then grain harvest will start somewhere after Labor Day in there. Sorghum, we really plant sorghum about two times. A lot of guys will plant the end of April, 1st of May, and so that sorghum will be ready, you know, mid-August. And then there's another batch that we like to plant maybe late June, early July. And, of course, that stuff won't be ready till probably late October.
Okay. Yeah, so you've got some miles to go yet. Is this a busy time for you as far as scouting? I mean, you mentioned cotton. It's kind of throughout the whole season. But as far as other things, like, is that the main focus right now, cotton? Or are you jumping around between crops quite a bit?
Yeah, we jump around quite a bit. You know, it's like I tell my interns in the summertime, I'm like, when we get to the 4th of July, that's kind of when the stuff hits the fan and things really start hopping. And so, yeah, you know, now in July, you know, as we get to the middle to the end of July, things really get going. And August will really be our busy season. That's when the insects really get going in cotton.
Okay.
And, you know, we're finishing up on our corn crop, and then sorghum silage will be heading out. And sorghum silage just seems like it goes on forever and ever.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time, James. Is there anything else you think we haven't covered that's valuable to know about your area?
I think you guys have asked some good questions. I've enjoyed visiting with y'all, and hope you guys have a good season, and look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Yeah, we'll hopefully see you in St. Louis this winter, but yeah, hope the rest of your season goes well too, and maybe some more of those bugs will stay away and make your job a little easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you, James, and have a good harvest down there, so appreciate talking to you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, that wraps up our tour around the U.S. We've covered a cross-section of the Midwest here and made it all the way down to Texas. So, Todd, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having all of us, Matt. So, yeah, here's a shout-out to all of the NAICC crop consultants that were able to join us. We appreciate that, and just good to always hear what's going on out there and talk to some of the other crop consultants out there.
Yep, we know what's going on in our area, but it's always good to hear what's going on in other parts of the world, and especially in ag. So we appreciate everyone who took the time to join us today, and now we'll leave you with a good day, and hopefully your season goes well. So thanks for listening, and happy farming.